Hear ye, all persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard. Please be seated.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC-14-986, State v. Russo. Arguing for the petitioner, Mr. Jacob Lowenthal. Arguing for the respondent, Mr. Richard Minatoya. Argument on the merits.
All right, good morning and aloha, everyone. The court is honored to be here today at the University of Hawaii at Hilo as part of our Courts in the Community program. Counsel, are you both ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
All right, Mr. Lowenthal, you reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning light with 5 minutes to go, and Mr. Minatoya will give you a warning with 5 minutes to go as well. Please proceed.
Thank you, Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. Justices, my name is Jacob Lowenthal, and I represent petitioner Thomas Russo in this case, and we are here for two issues. One, that Officer Lawson, through the state of Hawaii, violated Mr. Thomas Russo's Article 1, Section 4, Hawaii constitutional rights, as well as the United States First Amendment constitutional right by giving Mr. Russo an invalid time, place, and manner restriction, thereby abridging his freedom of speech. And two, that no probable cause existed in order to arrest Mr. Russo for the charge of obedience to an officer. Going to the first issue, Justices, on the First Amendment of the United States Constitution and our Article 1, Section 4 Constitution, the majority of circuits in the federal arena have all ruled, as well as there being some corollary cases here in the state, that the public has a constitutional right to film in a public area subject to reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions. The government, not the citizen, has the burden of proving that when the government is restricting such speech, that they do so in a manner that conforms with both state and federal constitutions. In terms of the actual test, Justices, and looking at the majority of the circuits, for example, the 9th, 3rd, 11th, and 1st, for guidance, since this court has not had the opportunity to really delve into that test, it seems clear that both the state and Hawaii constitutions afford such a right to the public to film officers engaging in public duties, for example, traffic stops such as here.
So, Mr. Lowenthal, if we were to rely on the Constitution, would we have to send this case back to the district court to make a finding about whether the restrictions that were placed on Mr. Russo were reasonable as to time, place, and manner?
Thank you, Chief Justice. The district court, in their findings of facts and conclusions of law, actually explicitly stated that the orders that Officer Lawson gave to Mr. Russo on that day on the side of the highway were not reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions. However, the district court, in their ruling, engaged in constitutional avoidance in order to not really address that issue, instead finding that there was a lack of probable cause. So based on the district court's own legal findings, it seems clear that the time, place, and manner restriction test was not met here. In terms of that actual test, we've got a couple options. We have the very broad term reasonableness. However, we would ask this court to go further in terms of actually applying that test. Now, looking at the circuit cases, most recently, one that was filed in July of this year, Fields versus City of Philadelphia, the court, again, in that case and in all the other circuit cases, really just say, yes, there is a subject, there is a restriction of reasonable time, place, and manner, but we don't need to get into that because it seems so clear. We're asking this court to take one step further and really apply that test in its fullness, and that is that in applying the test, that the restriction must be content neutral. There must be a significant state interest to further that's narrowly tailored. And lastly, that there's ample alternatives for that communication or speech to be given.
So what was improper about, start with Officer Fairchild, what was wrong about what Officer Fairchild did when he directed Mr. Russo to stand back initially?
Officer Fairchild's commands, while questionable, I don't think were as egregious as Officer Lawson's. He says, you need to step back, we're having a traffic operation here, don't want you to put yourself in any danger. Mr. Russo complies. He asks Officer Fairchild some preliminary questions about what the Maui Police Department are doing. They engage in a little bit of back and forth, and ultimately Officer Fairchild turns his back on Mr. Russo and waves him off.
But Mr. Russo, oh, I'm sorry, Justice.
Go ahead. Please go ahead. Chief Justice, go ahead.
But Mr. Russo at that point went around to the front of the unmarked car and filmed that license plate. From the video, it looks like he might have been within 2 feet of the edge of the curb. So is that compliant with the order that was given to him by Officer Fairchild? And if not, isn't that a basis for finding probable cause here?
The basis for probable cause was based on Officer Lawson's observations and actions, Chief Justice. Officer Fairchild, if he thought that Mr. Russo was not complying with his initial order, made no mention of him not complying when he filmed the license plate at the front. He had turned his back on him at that point. In fact, afterwards, Mr. Russo filmed the license plate. He turns again to Officer Fairchild and says, I think he asked another question. At that point, Officer Fairchild was essentially done with Mr. Russo.
Could Officer Fairchild have arrested him at that point, if based on the observation of him, instead of going behind the car, behind Officer Fairchild's car, coming around and circling to the front of the unmarked car? Could he have arrested him at that point?
Respectfully, no, Chief Justice. The reason being was that Officer Fairchild, unlike Officer Lawson, was not conducting a traffic stop at that point. He was merely standing on the side of the road observing traffic. He gave Mr. Russo a somewhat vague command of just stand over there, and Mr. Russo did his best to comply. And Officer Fairchild made no mention of him, of Mr. Russo being in non-compliance at that time.
What if Officer Fairchild had said, you must stay behind the car, you cannot come to the front of the car?
I believe that would be, it's certainly much clearer, Justice, and I think that could give rise to being a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction. Possibly if Officer Fairchild had reiterated the safety component, I think that would have made it even better, because it gives Mr. Russo a content-neutral avenue to still engage in his free speech rights while also ensuring Mr. Russo as well as the officer's safety.
Aren't we skipping over a step here when we talk about time, place, and manner? Doesn't the time, place, and manner directive have to relate to the circumstances? I mean, in other words, what may be appropriate in one situation may be completely different in another. It's one thing if there's a specific reason, but for somebody to just say stand back and there's no justification on the circumstances, I'm not sure it seems to me that's integrated to the time, place, and manner test.
Absolutely, Justice. And that's why we're asking this court to go one step further in adopting the full time, place, and manner test. Because based on that question, you can easily apply whether or not this was a content-neutral command of Officer Lawson or if it was a content-based command of Officer Lawson.
Do you think that if it's a traffic stop with a car with no cars or nothing impeding that car moving forward, the car that is stopped, it would still be a case-by-case analysis as to whether or not an officer who has conducted a traffic stop can say, you must stay behind the car, you cannot step in front of the car? You still have to analyze that on a case-by-case basis?
Yes, I think so, because every inquiry is so fact-intensive about where the traffic stop occurred, the boundaries of the public area, what the nature of the traffic stop was. For example, if there's a possibility that the driver of the stop could be a safety risk to the officers or passerbys.
Mr. Lowenthal, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but while you're on the issue of the application of the test, if we look at the factual findings that apply in this particular instance to the issue of the extent to which time, place, and manner was addressed by the police officer, the district court judge found that Mr. Russo was instructed multiple times, in the words of Officer Lawson, 5, 6, 7 times to step back out of the area of operation, which warning and direction was given by both Officer Fairchild and by Officer Lawson. And so this finding of fact was found significant by the intermediate court, right? That on that basis determined that there was probable cause. So this is talking about a time, place, and manner in the sense of don't go into this area of operation. So why doesn't this meet your test as to a specific order that directs Mr. Russo into time, place, and manner when the idea is right now, please remove yourself from this area of operation?
So to answer the question, Justice, with all respect to the district court, we believe that their findings of facts in that regard was erroneous. Chief Judge Nakamura, in his dissent in the Intermediate Court of Appeals summary disposition order, agreed with that, saying that the video makes it clear. And as we pointed out in our application to this court, the actual facts and the words spoken and the actions taken were inconsistent with.
Well, now I appreciate your analysis about the dissent, but getting back to the findings of fact, I'm sure you're aware that despite the findings of fact that I just recited, the district court judge found that the instructions to step back were not specific as to time, place, or manner. So it's interesting that the intermediate court has focused on a part of the court's ruling. And I wanted to ask you, to what extent should we be giving deference to this conclusion that the instructions to step back were not specific as to time, place, or manner when there's another finding that says that specific instructions were given and not complied with?
I think this court can review all of this in a fresh light and agree with the district court in some respects and not agree with the district court.
Is this a clearly erroneous analysis that we're applying to the findings of fact?
Yes, Justice.
Why is it clearly erroneous? Why is the judge at district court in any better position when both sides agreed that the video is what occurred?
Well, I think it's important to note Chief Judge Nakamura's dissent saying that his viewing of the video, he found that there was absolutely no probable cause to find Mr. Russo violated the specific statute of failing to obey to a police officer's command.
Mr. Lowenthal, I know you termed what Judge Kawano did as constitutional avoidance, but if the court can get where you want us to go by saying there's no probable cause, why should the court engage in constitutional analysis?
You can connect both of these issues together by looking at the statute itself, which says that it will be.
I know we can. Well, but why should we?
Well, for one, we're living in a time, Your Honor, where everyone has the ability to record, where it's becoming more and more and more important for the rights of citizens to engage in those and to be able to give them guidance in terms of how they can comply with the law as well as engage in their constitutional rights to film, especially with the advent of and it's important for two reasons. For one, it's important for the private citizen to engage in that type of marketplace of ideas, which is at the core of the First Amendment. In addition, it's a lot of times these videos can be used to exonerate officers of potential alleged wrongdoing. So it's a win-win situation for every side. It allows the public to hold their public officials accountable, at the same time allowing the our public officials the opportunity to defend themselves when they're accused of wrongdoing.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask, isn't the government charge your client with violation of a lawful order?
So I think.
He was charged with that, correct?
That is correct.
If the order is unconstitutional, is it lawful?
Absolutely, which is what I was, going to get to next, actually. So the statute specifically says lawful order, and applying the First Amendment test, the time, place, and manner, and finding that Officer Lawson's order was invalid, applying that time, place, and manner, it therefore follows that it couldn't be a lawful order pursuant to that statute.
In this case, was there any discrepancy between the oral testimony as to what occurred and the video, or what the videos showed?
So the oral testimony of Officer Lawson, they didn't really touch upon the actual events. They simply talked about beforehand where they instructed Mr. Russo to turn on his flashers, which he complied with. And then when it came to the actual arrest, they pretty much glazed over it. The driver who was pulled over at the time did testify that when Mr. Russo was becoming parallel with the car and filming, she said that Officer Lawson, during the traffic stop, told her, hey, someone's coming up to videotape. And at that point, Officer Lawson abandoned the traffic stop to approach Mr. Russo. In addition, in his police report, Officer Lawson stated that he informed Mr. Russo several times that he was obstructing and that he had to leave due to safety concerns, which was frankly inconsistent with the video that was taken.
Okay, so here's my question, and I'm not making any suggestion that there is any implication in this case, but are you suggesting that the courts must always give credence to a video over oral testimony?
I think that everyone agreed from the district court level upwards that the video is the best evidence to determine what actually happened and what was said, especially—
Would there ever be a situation in which a video may not be the best evidence? Aren't there situations in which videos are doctored?
Yes, and in those situations, I think it's—
And I'm not suggesting that applies to this case. So I'm hoping we're not going to adopt the rule that the video is always the best evidence.
Of course, and that is why I previously mentioned that it should be based on a case-by-case basis to ensure that whatever evidence is given is going to be the best evidence, whether or not it's through oral testimony or it's through the videotape.
And in this case, all the parties agreed that that was an accurate depiction of what occurred, right?
Yes, Justice. Okay. So there's no question in terms of what the video shows, and I believe the state's going to show you the video in their argument. But
well, looking at the video and considering this issue about failure to comply with the lawful order, would you say that the conversation that takes place between Mr. Russo and the police officers is, of course, evidence to a certain extent of Mr. Russo's intent to comply?
Yes.
And then in looking at that particular issue of intent, there was a statement made by Mr. Russo to the police where he said what they were doing was stupid. Now, would you say that that could be taken as evidence of an attitude that indicates unwillingness to comply?
So in terms of that statement, Justice, that was when Mr. Russo was speaking to the first officer, Officer Fairchild, asking him questions. Do you think it's appropriate for the Maui Police Department to be backing up traffic? They engage in a back and forth, and eventually Mr. Russo says, you know, it'd be great if you could answer my question. It'd be pretty stupid otherwise if you're trying to disagree with me that traffic isn't backed up. So was Mr. Russo challenging the officers? Yes. Was he questioning their authority at times? Yes. But that is why we live in the country that we live in, is that we are allowed to question the authority and to challenge their authority, subject to, of course, reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions. And in this case, and all of the precedents in terms of the First Amendment jurisprudence confirms
well,
that.
I follow your approach to the law. I'm just thinking about, with this particular fact, whether it'd be reasonable for Officer Lawson or Officer Fairchild to come to the conclusion that when what their operation is called stupid, that it reasonably indicates that they're not going to have compliance from Mr. Russo.
Respectfully, Justice, I think it would be difficult to create that chain between events when Officer Fairchild is speaking, when Mr. Russo is speaking with Officer Fairchild. They're very far apart. Officer Fairchild seems pretty dismissive of Mr. Russo at that point. And it was only until Mr. Russo passes Officer Fairchild and becomes parallel with the traffic stop, and he was at least 10, 15 feet away, that Officer Lawson abandons his own traffic stop and engages directly with Mr. Russo, which results in Mr. Russo's eventual arrest.
But
Officer Fairchild indicated, do you think the video shows him indicating, please step back behind his car, which is the first in the three cars, correct?
I don't think Officer Fairchild was necessarily giving such a clear command, Chief Justice. I think he says, we need you to just stand kind of back because we don't want you to get hit by a car, essentially is what he was telling Mr. Russo that he was worried about. And if he was concerned further with Mr. Russo's actions after he departed from Officer Fairchild, based on the video, we were given no indication that Officer Fairchild felt that Mr. Russo was not complying with his order.
What was the order of cars in this case?
So originally, there was Mr. Russo's car, which was parked on the shoulder. There was the...
Which car was in front?
Oh, I'm sorry, in front, like at the absolute front?
Yes.
Justice? That was the traffic stop initiated by Officer Lawson. So you had the traffic stop car, behind that was the unmarked car, and I believe there's maybe one more car, and then there's Mr. Russo's car.
So based on that fact pattern, and here, assuming a situation in which the stopped car can move forward or back, is it your position that it would be an unreasonable time, place, and manner restriction for a police officer to say, you may not stand in front or behind the car?
I think as long as that officer elucidated a clear reason for that restriction, such
as... For safety reasons, you may not stand in front or behind the car.
Yes.
Because we have so many situations where cars, you know, try to leave a scene.
Yes,
right?
Justice, that could very well be.
Or sometimes back up and move forward.
I think the key would be as long as they are not, as long as they're leaving the person who wants to film or engage in their speech with ample alternative channels of communication, which is the third prong of the test that we're asking this court to adopt, then yes, it should be a valid time, place, and manner restriction.
Is it your position the officer has to explain his or her rationale
in
the middle of a traffic stop next to a busy highway? Say this was H1 in Honolulu, and the cars are going by at 55 miles an hour. Is the officer required to explain a rationale in that circumstance?
I think it's, again, Chief Justice, it's such a fact-intensive inquiry that it's really going to depend on the facts. Taking that hypothesis, if you're on a busy traffic highway and a person pulls over behind the car and starts to film and interfere with the investigation by getting in the officer's way or distracting him from the investigation, and the officer doesn't have time to explain to that person why exactly he's asking him to step back, then yes, possibly that could be nevertheless a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction, even though the officer doesn't have time to explain.
In fact,
exactly
the cases,
why.
You know, that I think some of them that you've discussed and Mr. Minatoya's predecessor discussed in his brief say that traffic stops are somewhat different. In other words, the analysis in the situation of a traffic stop is a bit different because of the inherent danger of that situation. I believe one case refers to it as it's an inherently dangerous situation. So what exactly can an officer, what did the officers do wrong in this circumstance, in your view?
In this circumstance, Chief Justice, it was the main focus is on Officer Lawson. And when he initially told Mr. Russo, please turn on your flashers, we're worried about your safety, that was valid. It was a clear direction. He explained why. But at the point where Mr. Russo became parallel with the traffic stop, making no indication towards Officer Lawson, not addressing him whatsoever, not interfering, you know, at that point, and at the point that Officer Lawson stepped away from his own traffic stop and approached Mr. Russo and said, can you step back there? Can you step back there? Don't come over here. There's a traffic stop being conducted. Can you stand back there? You're obstructing government operations. That was his initial opening with Mr. Russo as he was approaching.
And Mr. Russo said, no, I'm not obstructing. That was his response, correct?
That is correct. He said,
what kind of stop was this for?
This was Operation Recon, Justice, which is for...
This was for tinting.
Yes.
So we're taking a case, and we're talking about one extreme, and we have a tinting. So if we're going to have a rule that says different rules for stops... So every time a police officer stops somebody for a speeding or traffic or they're pulled over at an intersection, any single stop, the police can have this absolute rule that says because it's a stop, nobody can walk on the sidewalk past the car? Isn't this driven by the circumstances?
Yes, it is. And I think that's exactly a key point to make in determining the allowance of the public to film in public to ensure that there's as much information disseminated to further the marketplace of ideas pursuant to the First Amendment of the of both constitutions.
Can you clarify that? I mean, you rightfully point out that the case law notes that this is a cardinal aspect of the First Amendment, the opportunity for citizens to engage in free discussion of government affairs by photographing them or videotaping them. But does that suggest that we should apply a different standard to videotaping that was done just for a private purpose? Maybe somebody's on vacation and they happen to be videotaping a police officer, but not necessarily for purposes of discussing it as a public issue? Does it make a difference?
No, it should not make a difference, Justice. The reason being is that whether or not you're intending to disseminate this on the internet or simply keep it for private purposes, the actual act of photographing or recording is the engagement of speech. Some courts have even gone so far as to hold that, I think in one circumstance, I believe it was the Fields case that was recently decided, where they said that the facts were that Fields attempted to record, but then their phone battery was drained, but they continued to pretend to record, and that the court held that even though it wasn't even recording, it was still an engagement of free speech. So respectfully, no, there is no difference. I see that my time has expired, Justices.
Okay, you wanted to reserve some time for rebuttal, correct?
Yeah.
All right, very well, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, good morning. When I was first given this case, and this case was brought to my attention when the summary disposition order came out, and I saw Chief Judge Nakamura's dissent, my first impression was, oh, it's a loser case for us, until I saw the video. And I think it's important for all of us to see the video so that we're all talking about the same thing, because there was some classification or explanation about certain aspects of the video, which basically is somebody's interpretation and not what actually took place. So I'll play the video.
Do you think it's justifiable to back traffic all the way up to Hailey and Miley?
We're not backing anybody up.
We've got photographs of it backed up all the way to Hailey and Miley.
I see
that. The traffic. Do you think that's appropriate to do that to residents of Maui County?
See, it's open right up there.
Do you think it's appropriate to back up traffic that far?
It's open.
Yeah, we have photographs. I have photographs of it back to Hailey and Miley. So you don't argue with me. That's really stupid. I'm just asking, do you think it's appropriate to do this?
A
not going to argue. I'm just showing you.
Okay. What is your name, officer?
I'm Officer Fairchild.
Officer Fairchild?
Yeah.
All right.
We're pulling cars over in this area right here, okay? So please step off to the side. I want you to get run over.
Okay. What kind of violations are you looking for?
There's an issue with the Wi-Fi. In any event, you can see that unlike the characterization of it being filming, this is beyond filming. He's putting himself in that situation. He's actually interfering or trying to interact with the officer as the officer is doing a traffic stop.
Was Officer Fairchild doing, it seemed like the other officer was actually, Officer Lawson was actually at the driver's side.
That's correct. So, you know, they talked about Officer Lawson, Officer Fairchild just turning his back on him. At that point, he was not doing a traffic stop with a person or a subject there. And you notice that he kept having to look at traffic as he's talking to.
What was this, by the way? What is this operation?
My understanding is it's an operation where they're doing spot enforcement, spot checks for window tint and
seatbelts. Why is all the traffic going so slow? Why is it all backed up like that?
I have no.
Do they make people slow down?
I think it's a lot. It appears that it also involves rubbernecking to see what's going on.
Well, are the police allowed to slow down traffic so that they can pick out cars that they believe are violating some either tinting or whatever recon violation? Is that legal?
I would say it is. I don't know the legal, I don't know the statutory authority for that.
Well, we have something for roadblocks, for sobriety roadblocks.
That's
is there
correct.
Anything like this where the police can set up on a road and selectively pick any car that they feel by just on a highway do this?
Not off the top of my head, I'm not aware of anything other than, I guess,
so when you
a lot of times, I'm sorry.
No, when you just characterize what Mr. Russo was doing, it seems like there might have been a good reason why Mr. Russo may have been interested on what was occurring.
He may have been interested. He had the opportunity to ask, but he was told, you know, move to the side. Now, he purports later in the video that I'm the publisher of the Maui Time newspaper. If he had any questions, rather than asking the officers at that location while they're doing and working with traffic, he could have just called the police station, speak to the chief's office or the public information officer, and raise his questions at that time, not out there on the street.
So your position is a person, an individual, whether a newspaper person or a member of the public, has no right to stop and view what government officials are doing, even if they're not interfering with the actual the function that's going on at that specific time?
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we don't have a problem with that. In fact, the legislature this year or last passed a bill that says it's legal for citizens to film police officers in a public place doing their duty.
So what was it that Mr. Russo did that was wrong? When he engaged and quite frankly got into an argument with Officer Fairchild, Officer Fairchild was not conducting a stop at that point in time. So what did Russo do that prevented the officers? Now, a reconstruction Operation Recon, I assume, is reconstruction permits, which means cars that are too low to the ground or dark tinted. But I know this is a multiple question, but usually don't they just pick up, they're driving along the street, they see somebody, they don't actually stop cars along the street. And, you know.
They may, you know, I'm not sure, but they may have had a grant from the Department of Transportation to do this.
And what, that made stop? A reason.
Well, to enforce the traffic laws as they apply to the
sure.
reconstruction situation of vehicles or the tint and the wearing of seatbelts.
Were they stopping every car?
Didn't appear like they were.
It was kind of crawling along, so maybe.
So again, I'm not sure if that's okay. just a product of rubbernecking by the other motorists.
However, Mr. Russo was not. He was engaging. He was arguing with
that's
Officer
correct.
Fairchild. But Fairchild, as Justice McKenna pointed out, is not part of the stop. It was Lawson who was talking to the stopped.
And I don't think it's the portion of the video that involves Officer Fairchild that's in question. It's more of the part where Officer Lawson, while conducting a traffic stop, dealing with a motorist, traffic going on behind him,
he sees Mr. Russo.
That's correct.
And then comes around to talk to Mr. Russo. So
that's correct. But he has a motorist there.
Yeah.
Mr. Russo comes up. He's not just filming. He's asking questions. And then, from the nature of the questions, he's trying to provoke the officer, it appears.
Was he speaking? Was there any evidence that he was actually, was he speaking to Officer Lawson at that time?
Well,
it just seemed like he was walking and filming.
He was walking. Officer Lawson tells him to back up. They have the traffic stop. And then he gets argumentative. I don't think it would have been a problem. It doesn't appear that it would have been a problem if he had backed off.
What if Mr. Russo had not been filming? What if Mr. Russo was just someone that was decided to walk up the hill and was just walking by? It was actually the fact that he was filming that caused Officer Lawson to stop him, right?
Well, I think, you know, it appears that he was just told initially to clear the location.
Are you saying that? Oh, okay. So, but
I think if it's a regular.
What if this was a walking path for somebody else? I mean, seriously, I can't imagine people walking from, you know.
I agree with that.
That part of town up the hill, but what if they were walking up the hill?
If it's a typical pedestrian, it doesn't appear that it would be a problem. Yes, he was filming, and that's what caught the officer's attention. Now, there is an engagement after that, after he's told to clear, stay clear.
Are you saying that Mr. Russo engaged with Officer Lawson and that's why Officer Lawson left the traffic stop?
Well, it appears that number one, Officer Lawson doesn't know who this person is, who's arguing with him.
Well, so you're saying he argued with him while Lawson was conducting the traffic stop, and that's why Lawson came away from it?
It appears from the video that Officer Lawson tells him to stay clear.
Yeah, but it's
he gets questioned, and then he walks around.
But it's when he's approaching that Officer Lawson leaves the position at the window. He begins to approach Russo. So it's Officer Lawson who leaves after he's talking to him to approach Russo.
The initial part was him telling him to back off.
The initial part is, excuse me, sir. Russo responds, yes, sir. And then he asks him, can you stand back there? And as he's asking him if he could stand back there, Russo answers, oh, no, I'm in. And then he gets interrupted. And then Russo's told by the officer, you're obstructing a government operation. And he responds, he's not.
Well, maybe another way to ask for your clarification, Mr. Minatoya, is, what was the lawful order that Mr. Russo violated?
He was told to stay clear of that area of operation. So that area where the cars are located, and perhaps even
so you
safe
believe that
from
any
there.
Order saying stay away is a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction?
We come down to given the situation. Now we have moving traffic.
There is
a traffic stop.
Didn't Mr. Russo did try and step away? Is it cane fields or some sort of vegetation, right?
I don't know if at that time cane operations had already ceased.
He's stepping away from the road and away from the car. And it seems like the camera goes up a little bit. So
yeah,
he
steps up onto the hill.
On a berm or something.
That's right. He steps up onto the hill where the cane field is.
And then so he's away from what's going on. And then Lawson keeps coming towards him and telling him, you got to.
Well, he's still directing him back to be on where the traffic stops with the
because he tells him you're on private property now.
That's correct. And then he steps off the hill and approaches Officer Lawson at that time.
Could the officer, incidentally, after Russo goes on to private property, I was interested in the fact where Russo says, can I stand here? And the officer says, you can't stand there on private. Does the officer have the right to tell him that he can't be on private property?
And that, you know, and that's the one thing I don't agree with, in that if he's in private property, he's in private property.
Well, the officer tells him he can't be there. That's the whole reason he comes down.
Well, he steps
and he gets down. He's sitting on public property, and then almost immediately, as he comes down on the public property, and in order to come off of it, he has to come closer, and that's when the arrest starts.
But the video shows how close he approached the officer. Instead of just leaving as instructed, he comes off of the hill. Yes, because the officer said he can't be there. But it's not unreasonable to tell him to stay above the location of the traffic stops or where the traffic operation is taking place. But he doesn't do that.
He's
he sticks
asking,
around and he argues.
Well, you know, he says, where can I stand? And he walks a few steps and then again, can I stand here? This is private property. The officer appears to respond. You stand back there. You're on private property. He comes down. Can I stand on public property? And then immediately, you're touching me. You're touching me, and he gets arrested.
He gets down where he was originally told, where he was when he was originally told not to be at that location, to move beyond where they were operating.
And when you say originally told, by whom? Officer Fairchild or Officer Lawson?
Lawson.
So you're
because he goes around to the side of the road in line with where the vehicle that's being stopped is located.
So your interpretation of what happened is Officer Lawson told him to stand behind that vehicle, correct?
Well,
meaning farther up the road.
That's correct.
So what do you make of the district court's efforts to address this issue of whether that was a reasonable time, place, or manner restriction? It seems like. On one hand, the district court says, I can't rule about the constitutional issue. On the other hand, he says, the instructions to step back were not specific as to time, place, or manner as testified to by the defense expert. So are we in a position to rule at this point, or should we send this back to the district court to consider the issue of whether the instructions were reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions?
You know, although it seems to run counter to judicial economy, you know, we would say that it's not proper because, you know, it's not an issue that they raised on appeal. We raised the appeal based upon the determination of probable cause.
Why would they appeal it? They had it dismissed.
That's correct. But they could have, once we got the determination, they had the opportunity to file for a notice of appeal as well.
Mr. Minichoy, I'll give you that Mr. Russo was argumentative. Is that enough reason to arrest somebody?
You know,
because he is walking backwards. While he's walking backwards.
Well, he's walking backwards because they're already coming to him.
They're coming towards him, and they're going back up. He's walking backwards. He said, you're touching me, which I think they're allowed to touch him as long as it's not overly intrusive. But he is walking backwards. The camera's going backwards while they're telling him to go backwards.
He's walking backwards because there's that statement, I'm going to arrest you.
Well,
right?
And what do they say?
And then he starts backing up.
What do they say they're arresting him for? You're obstructing government operations, which is very interesting because the officer left the car where he was talking to somebody about tent, walks over, approaches this individual, engages him, and then says, arresting you for obstructing government operations? But we're not even here for obstructing government operations, are we? We're here for a lawful order, which, interestingly enough, even though apparently the police officer wasn't even clear what was being said. And I have one other question about this operation. It wasn't just these two police officers, was it?
Apparently not.
There's like six police officers. So where is this operational area that had to be vacated by this individual? Where are the borders? Where was he supposed to go? What was constitutional here? What specific area?
Well, it seems from Officer Fairchild's direction, it's beyond where his vehicle was. That vehicle was the first vehicle, right? And he says, you need to stay over there.
And are you reading that? Is that something he ever said? Because I didn't see it. You must stand, you may stand right here where my car ends.
Well, again, then we get into the question of what is applicable to a given situation. And here we all see he's talking to Mr. Russo while still having to watch the vehicles. So he's watching the vehicles. It's not like standing on the sidewalk where there's a curb. Here there's no curb, it's just a shoulder and where the officer's standing. So, I mean, you got to look at, I think the court needs to look at the totality of the circumstances.
Can you help me with the totality of the circumstances and the way to look at it, Mr. Minutoya? I can appreciate that you're, I think, focusing on conduct of the police officer and Mr. Russo, but looking at the totality of the circumstances, who has the burden to establish that a lawful order was not complied with?
It'll be the state.
Okay, so we can take that into consideration. It's the state's burden. Also, the case law makes clear that there are First Amendment interests that are quite strong in this situation, right? You have an individual who's attempting to record public activity of police officers, which is clearly covered by the First Amendment, and it's seen as a quite strong First Amendment issue. So when we look at the totality of the circumstances and consider if this is correct, that at no time did Mr. Russo say no. At no time did he say, I'm not going to follow orders. At no time did he refuse a direct order, as far as his language is concerned. Then aren't we just engaging in a kind of speculation about his conduct in the context of the significance of this kind of First Amendment moment?
Well, as I've stated earlier, we don't have a problem with the taping, but it's the interaction, the questioning of the officers while, they're busy with doing this operation.
Okay, well,
the appropriateness of that is the problem, not
again,
the question of whether or not he can tape.
What did Mr. Russo ask Mr. Lawson as he was walking along the side of the car and filming? I didn't hear anything.
Lawson or Fairchild?
I'm sorry, what did Mr. Russo ask Mr. Officer Lawson? We're not dealing with the interaction with Mr. Officer Fairchild. In terms of Officer Lawson, I don't think I heard Mr. Russo asking Officer Lawson anything.
It was his location at where the car was actually stopped. And
so
it
he
seems
could not walk along the side of the car while he was filming. What was wrong with what he did? Was it because he walked along the side of the car, or was it because he was filming?
It appears that he had come up and started filming instead of, if he continued walking, I don't think anybody, if that was the problem, then we wouldn't be here because we would have said the officer had no business stopping somebody that's walking down the highway.
But you agree to this video as being the facts, and what Justice McKenna just asked you, there's nothing showing that.
That he came around and was, bothering Officer Lawson.
He's there filming. We don't know, the officer doesn't know what his intentions are. So that's why he's asked to go above the location. What's the difference between being right there or being
where he can? Do intentions matter? Do intentions matter?
Well, if I would say if you're the officer and you don't know who you're dealing with in that car, let alone you don't know who you're dealing with standing over there while you got traffic moving, somebody with a vehicle stopped right in front of you, yeah, there would be a concern. It's not just a cut and dry, like I said, on some sidewalk where there's a curb and parked cars between that and traffic. Traffic is right there.
So would you agree with the cases that say the test is different in situations of a traffic stop as opposed to in a public park, on a sidewalk, other places where there might be a confrontation between police and someone who wants to film them? What are the special circumstances that exist in the situation of a traffic stop?
Well, I think, what needs to be taken into consideration is, you have a vehicle that's being stopped that the driver, you don't know for sure who that person is and what that person's intentions are.
Excuse me, so, but was this a stop where this is an APB with somebody who's committed a robbery, or is this a police-initiated stop for a tint window And so we do know who the police officer, the nature of this activity. Wouldn't the nature of the stop make a difference?
No.
No?
And I would
the
say
all
no.
All stops are the
and
same.
And we say no because of the fact that when the officer makes the stop, they still cannot tell what the intention of that person is. What if that person does have a warrant out for them and wants to avoid being arrested? And so this traffic stop leads into something beyond what the officer expected it to be, just a routine traffic stop. So here, like I said, to address...
So it doesn't matter. You know, Chief Justice asked if it was different, if it was on a street or whatever. You're saying any stop is dangerous, so nobody can film.
That's not correct.
Then
what I'm
why
saying
does this
is,
make
is a
traf-
because the traffic stop, the subject of the stop is in a vehicle. The vehicle is a dangerous instrument that can be used, you know, to
but
escape.
That's true of any traffic stop.
That's correct.
And so what you're saying is any traffic stop, it's a danger, it can be used as a dangerous instrument, so any traffic stop, people can't film it?
I'm not saying you can't film it. That's the distinction. It's not the filming. It's not the act of filming. It's the interaction that takes place. And in this case, the provocation that's trying to be had.
Well, so, even if that were true, you know, that he did interact, did he look dangerous?
You know,
of course, you can't tell from the film. That's true. You can't tell because it's
and I know, apparently, I've seen him with his counsel. Otherwise, I would not know who he is if I saw him. So I can't give you that answer.
Let me ask you this also. This is Haleakala, right? Highway. Is
that's
that
correct.
However, it's a highway, but as you can tell from when the camera pans back, it's at a crawl. So it's not like it's as cars are zooming by going down the highway. Because of this stop looking for reconstruction permits, or failure to get reconstruction permits, cars are moving very slowly. So it's not, if you're looking at situations and whether or not it's dangerous, it's not that dangerous a situation because the police have slowed it down so much that cars are moving very slowly.
No, I don't know if it was the police that slowed it down that much or just it's just a result of rubbernecking, which could change the flow of traffic at any time. So,
well, if the police caused the rubbernecking, they're the cause of the slow traffic. Either way, but if you're looking at circumstances, it's not that dangerous now, right? You saw the tape. The traffic is very, very slow.
We don't know because there's one lane that there's two lanes, and one lane didn't seem like anybody was in it. So,
well, is there danger in a situation where an officer has his back turned to the road and is talking to the person who they've made the stop with, and then is trying to engage with someone else at the same time? Is that a situation that has some potential for distracting the officer? If, for example, one of those cars, somebody's drinking, someone's texting, and they kind of go off the side of the road.
Diverted attention is always a problem because now instead of just the motorist and the traffic, it's also a third party that's
so every
there.
Jogger, every walker, every bicyclist, I guess it all has to be completely stopped.
No, because they're not interacting with the police.
But the interaction was triggered by the officer in this case. He was just approaching.
But he could have just complied, and that wouldn't have been a problem.
And how did he not comply?
By staying there, and that's when he starts arguing that I'm not obstructing, yada, 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 whatever he says.
I thought he went back by the berm. He went back. He
that's
said,
later
back,
when
and
the officer... That's later when the officer goes around.
Well, he wasn't just standing there. That appears to be evident from the video. So I think your feeling is that he wasn't backing up fast enough, or that the reason he was backing up was just because a police officer was approaching him. But in either instance, again, you're looking at the facts and suggesting that what he was doing wasn't just not complying. He was intentionally disobeying an order. So help me if I'm misunderstanding, but it appeared as though Mr. Russo at no time positioned himself in front of the police officer, stopped, and refused to move. This is kind of a moving situation, if you will.
Yeah, what is of note is that he's told to stay above the location of the traffic operations. But then he doesn't start moving back until a police officer starts approaching him.
You know, going back to what the officer says to him, the officer again said, you know, you're obstructing a government operation. And interesting, you know, and then he says to him again that same statement about this obstruction. And, you know, Mr. Russo says, you know, he's not doing it. I'm not obstructing at all. I wonder, can we now agree? Maybe the officer actually agreed with him because there's no prosecution for obstruction of justice or obstruction. It's interesting. Does the officer now agree that he actually wasn't obstructing?
It seemed as though, well, the charge wasn't made, but the charges were filed by our office, I guess, after review of the evidence.
So then you agree with Mr. Russo that he wasn't obstructing justice or government operation?
But not obeying a lawful order of a police officer.
Which the officer...
There is the concern about safety that we've been discussing. So based on that, it's not like it's not a lawful order. There is a clear instruction for him to stay above that location. He does not do so and does not back up until the police officers start walking toward him. Well, the statement, I'm going to arrest you.
You know, as Mr. Justice Wilson indicated, there is no time where he says to him, no, I am not going to obey a specific order. He's told he's obstructing and he's explaining to the officer that he wasn't. And that's when he gets arrested.
And again, you know, we don't have a problem with him videotaping, but it's the interaction and the argument with the police officers.
Didn't the police officer testify that he felt that he shouldn't have been videotaping without following my police department policy on media contact?
You know, it's clear that everybody has the right to videotape or photograph or record in a public place.
But the officer didn't think he should have been.
That's correct.
So you don't think that that was...
That's correct, and the officer is not correct in that.
Right, and so you don't think that was the instigating factor, that he did not think that he didn't want to be filmed, he didn't think he should be filmed, he didn't think that Russo had the right to film him, and it wasn't just safety, but that he didn't want to be filmed?
Regardless whether he wanted to be didn't want to be filmed or not, there was a lawful order in our position that there is a traffic operation taking place with vehicles on a highway. That you know, safety is a concern. Now, if this court wants to come down with a bright line rule that says, you know, there is this right and you must be specific about time and place, then we have this problem about situations like this where the police don't have total control over the location. And
they set up there?
That's correct. They did set up there. But the question is, it's still other people, other human beings driving their vehicles on a public street that they need to be concerned about, regardless how fast or slow they're going. Because as the Chief Justice points out, somebody could have been under the influence or distracted.
Mr. Minatoya, your time's up. Any very brief closing comments before
that's
we...
That's it. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for your argument. Mr. Lowenthal, your rebuttal.
Thank you again. I'd be happy to explain a little bit more about...
Turn the light off, please. I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you.
Excuse me. I'd be happy to explain exactly what Operation Recon was. Based on Officer Lawson's direct testimony, he testified there was no set time. It was just that we all went from the station in the morning. We just went out and did enforcement. So it was, I guess, ideal for the whole shift. But we were actually just going to different locations, but we all agreed to come to this location. In other words, there was no grant. There was nothing. It was the police traffic division deciding we're all going to convene on one area, and we're going to make traffic come to a standstill, and we're going to pull over cars for traffic violations. I think some of the state's responses were frankly a little disturbing, such as the suggestion that instead of a citizen employing his constitutional rights by pulling over on the side of the highway and filming, that he instead defer to the police by calling them
and essentially getting a spokesperson instead of directly engaging in their own constitutional rights. In terms of the government's position that the lawful order violated was simply staying clear of the operation, I think this court has found that that was clearly an unlawful order. It didn't leave ample alternatives of communications for Mr. Russo to engage in his speech. In addition, there's countervailing conflicting evidence. For example, if that was the safety concern, why did Officer Lawson originally tell Mr. Russo, turn your flashers on, instead of immediately telling him to leave because this is a safety concern?
Why? Well, along those lines, Mr. Lowenthal, Mr. Minatoya brings up a point. Whenever a car is stopped, they don't know. Probably when you're looking for an equipment violation, it's less likely to be somebody dangerous, or no reconstruction permit. However, are you saying that under any circumstance a passerby or anybody can come up and engage an officer who has stopped a vehicle?
So I think this is exactly why this case is so important. I think, and it also, based on the testimony in the district court, it's clear that the Maui Police Department have no definitive guidelines for instructing their officers on how to proceed in terms of dealing with the public, members of the public, who want to engage in their free speech rights. In terms of approaching the vehicle, I think that obviously interfering with the traffic stop by approaching the officer while he's engaged, by trying to distract him, et cetera, that is subject to time, place, and manner restrictions. But I think as this court pointed out, and based on the videotape, that was not the case here. Mr. Russo was not engaging with Officer Lawson. He was merely walking parallel. And at that point, Officer Lawson abandoned his own traffic stop, actually went in front of the car that he had stopped.
But hadn't Mr. Russo been asked by Officer Fairchild to stay back behind Officer Fairchild's car? So he's already possibly violating that order, right? Or so, is that not right in your view?
Officer, understand. Thank you, Chief Justice. Officer Fairchild said, and I quote, please step off to the side. So he didn't say, go behind my car or anything like that. He said, just please step off to the side.
Where was he pointing? Can you tell where he was pointing when he said that?
Well, if this is from a first-person perspective, Officer Fairchild was basically doing this, kind of pointing towards the cane field area, which, as this court pointed out, is private property. So when Officer Lawson did approach Mr. Russo attempted to comply, asking him questions, asking him, can I stand here?
So you think there was an ambiguity about whether he was just saying, stand back in the field or stand behind my car?
Yes, and I think that is exactly why it was, another reason why it was an invalid time.
Why wouldn't we send this back to the district court to address that factual question?
I think it goes towards the need for this court to directly address this issue. The district court didn't want to address it.
Well, we certainly can give legal guidance, but who makes that ultimate call? Because in your view, if the officer had been clear and definitive, that would... I think that was one of the concerns, certainly in this case, is that it wasn't clear what Mr. Russo was supposed to do, correct?
Correct. And I think the district court already addressed that by finding that it was not a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction. So, and I think the issue is that the Intermediate Court of Appeals didn't address the constitutional issue as well. So if anything, if this court is unable to reach the conclusion, it should be remanded back
but
to the...
The district court found that he'd violated orders given by the officer. So apparently the district court felt that there was some order that was clear enough that he should have understood it but still violated. So you have these conflicting findings. Isn't that right? I mean, on one hand, the district court said, well, he was told, safety concerns, step back, he violated those orders. On the other hand, he said, the court says it's unclear as to whether these restrictions were definite enough. Why wouldn't we send that back to the district court to take further evidence on?
I think that it's frankly unnecessary, Chief Justice. I think that
there wasn't he arrested by Officer Lawson because Officer Lawson said he was obstructing, and if there's no evidence that he was. If he was complying, which is what the video and the discussion seems to reflect, then can't the district court be affirmed on another basis then?
I see that. I believe my time's expired.
You can certainly answer the question, then briefly wrap up.
Thank you. Yes, Justice, exactly. And if I could just briefly wrap up, this case is important. because it goes to the heart of our First Amendment rights, and everyone, the Maui Police Department, as well as the public citizens, need a definitive standard. They need to be given direction about what exactly their constitutional rights are. I thank the court.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Lowenthal, and thank you to both of our attorneys today. The court will take this matter under advisement, which means we'll be issuing a decision at a future date. But again, I really want to thank Mr. Lowenthal and Mr. Minatoya for being here with us today and participating. Can you please join me in acknowledging them? And I would, at this time, there are a lot of folks, it's a big event and a lot goes into it, and I'd like to acknowledge and thank some of the people who are involved. But most importantly, I want to thank the students and teachers who are here with us today. I think that's what makes this program so important and so special, is the fact that it provides a unique educational opportunity to students to see an actual oral argument and to understand what the rule of law looks like in practice. So I want to acknowledge the students here with us today from Connections Public Charter School, Hawaii Academy of Arts and Science, Hilo High School, Honoka'a High and Intermediate, Laupahoehoe Community Public Charter School, and Waiakea High School, as well as their teachers who've worked so hard to help prepare them for today. You know, our future as a democracy depends on the public understanding of our Constitution and the protections it provides, so the dedication of these students preparing today and listening so attentively, I think, shows that we're in good hands going forward. So please join me in acknowledging our students and teachers. Thank you. And we have a number of special guests who are here today. I'd like to mention council member Jennifer Ruggles, supervising deputy public defender Michael Bestugawa, prosecuting attorney Mitch Roth, our former Chief Judge Ronald Ibarra, Barbara Lively is here on behalf of Councilmember Eileen O'Hara, Corporation Counsel Joseph Camelamela is here, Director of the Hawaii Academy of Arts and Science Stephen Hirakami is here, our Hawaii State Bar Association President Nadine Ando is here with her mother Masui Ando, who's a retired teacher at Hilo and Waiakea High Schools. And our Hawaii State Bar Association President-elect, Howard Luke. We also have Representative Joy San Buenaventura, state rep, who's also a volunteer with the program. And we have a number of Third Circuit judges who are here today, Chief Judge Greg Nakamura, as well as Judges Mel Fujino, Harry Freitas, Henry Nakamoto, Margaret Masunaga, Ali Auna, Kanani Laubach, Dakota Franz, and Darian Nagata. And so we're glad to have all those folks, appreciate them coming today. We really appreciate the University of Hawaii Hilo for hosting us. Lee Dombrowski, Rob Abe, Dori Yamada, and External Affairs Vice President Jerry Chang were all wonderful. We just got such a warm welcome here. We really are deeply, deeply appreciative. Folks at the University of Hawaii Law School, SPOCHI, Students for Public Outreach and Civic Education, helped prepare us for this. So those of you who are thinking about a law school down the line, the Richardson School of Law is a wonderful school and is very, very deeply engaged in our community. So they helped to develop the teaching materials today. Finally, one more very important shout out to the attorneys from the Hawaii County Bar Association, who generously volunteered to visit classrooms, to work with the students about this case, conduct practice arguments, answer questions so the students would understand the issues that we discussed here today. We have more than 25 attorneys volunteer, so we're so grateful to them, and a number of them are here today. I really like to thank them. And we have a lot of other folks helping out on the site here today. We have from our Third Circuit Court, Lester Oshiro, Dawn West, Cheryl Salmo, Kathy Sakamoto, Ayanna Wainwright, Leslie Kawamoto, and from the Office of County of Hawaii Corporation Counsel, Emery Carvalho, Cliff Victorin, and Kathy Ferrara. And I want to thank Jeff Ng for serving as MC, and you're going to hear shortly from Sherry Tavares and Ryan Cadet, who are going to be our co-moderators. So again, to the folks who have organized this, Jeff Ng is the president of the Hawaii County Bar Association. Jerry Hasegawa is a representative of East Hawaii and the Hawaii State Bar Association. Thanks to them for all their hard work in organizing everything that happened here today. Thanks to Paradise Beverages for donating water for our students, and again, thanks to the Hawaii State Bar Foundation for its generous support with the buses, lunches, and other parts of our event today, as well as the Hawaii State Bar Association and the Hawaii County Bar Association. So thank you to all of those folks. Thank you to our students, lawyers, and all the attorneys who helped out. And there being no further business, this court stands adjourned. Thank you.
Please rise. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned until further notice. Please be seated.
As the remainder of the program is educational, we kindly ask members of the public and the media to please exit the auditorium. Volunteer attorneys and invited guests are welcome to stay as they are part of the educational program. Before the next portion of the program, there will be a brief pause as we rearrange the room. Students, please remain seated at this time. Thank you.